Here's what I want to do. Well, I don't want to take a whole lot of time, but I want to hit a couple of things, and it's going to feel a little bit like I am just shooting a shotgun at you. I'm just going to fire off a bunch of different things. You write down some notes. You write down what sticks. You write down what questions you have. We're going to have a Q&A at the end. You can ask any question you want in the world. I know one of the questions, I got to hang out with one of the 10th grade guys groups at Pelham as we were going through this last few weeks, and I can't remember which week, but one of the things that really stood out to them, surprisingly, not really, was Matt Williams said, "Hey, young guys, here's the deal. You work hard at school, you make good grades, you'll get a hot wife who really wants to have sex with you." Y'all remember hearing that? Come on, Bruce, don't look shy. We talked about it for like 30 minutes in group. Matt knows he said it. It might be a little bit of a stretch. It's probably not a guarantee. But I can tell you this. You take the opposite side of it, there's not a lot of really nice girls looking for a lazy bum who doesn't really care about school and is just kind of lazy, passive through life, right? So you can take that part to the bank for sure. But here's the thing. This has been the best connection that I've seen made, especially with young guys over the last few weeks. Work is a very spiritual thing. Like, we want to separate so much of our work, our schoolwork, everything we're responsible for in life. We want to separate those things from our relationship with Christ. And I've noticed so many teenage guys who are going, "Man, I'm just not that good of a Christian. I'm not a strong believer. I have a hard time getting up in the morning and reading my Bible or doing this and that." When the truth is, hopefully through this study, what you've seen is the way you view work is actually the way in which your faith gets fleshed out through deeds. So as James starts talking about, faith without deeds is useless, is dead. This is one of the ways that we actually get to work it out. And so you've heard a couple of different buzzwords, a couple of different things we've talked about over the last few weeks. I'm gonna kind of hit some of them and then just give you some pointers. And so you see that first one, the call is to cultivate. We talked about this a number of times. I think we have a tendency a lot of times in Grace and Men's Roundtable language to almost make it a slang word sometimes. And so I've even heard some of you going, "Hey, man, we need to go cultivate." I've seen y'all tweeting out hashtag cultivate, all this stuff. It's really cool now. It's getting all trendy. But here's what I want you to see. To cultivate, literally what it means is to develop, to put energy into, to meet a need. Like it gives the picture of someone or something whose potential is undeveloped and that you are going to put energy into that to make it better. That's what it means to cultivate. And so literally, you could apply it in a number of ways. I mean, if I look at my afternoon, I spent an hour or two playing with my four-year-old daughter in a pink castle. There's actually part of that that's cultivating, that I am putting energy into her, that I am blessing her, that I am letting her kind of play with me and also teaching her and doing these different things. That's actually cultivating. Some guys were talking about other ways to do it just around campus. Strategic conversations, just being a blessing to people, even not to people, to pick up trash, to do things that you feel are just not necessarily required of you, but you're willing to do it because it meets a need. You're making something better. And so that's what it means. That's what it means to cultivate. You need to think through, if I am cultivating something, how am I helping it thrive or how am I helping it flourish? And so you can apply those words to people, you can apply them to things, and you can even apply them to yourself. One of the biggest things you're going to hear tonight, you actually have to cultivate yourself, that you are responsible for your own development. And so one of the things I hear all the time is, where you see biggest excuse, the biggest thing I hear from you guys is, "Hey, you just don't understand how busy I am," right? I'm always hearing from high school guys going, "Hey, you know what, at the end of the day, man, I'm just too busy. I'm just tired whenever I wake up. I'm too tired to do anything meaningful. I just want to veg out and go do this thing." And so here's what I want to show you. This is really interesting. Look at this. Last slide for you. If you take the number of hours in a day by a week, you got 168 hours. All right, judging off of what we heard in this study, if you take the idea of cultivating and God's plan of kind of working 6 days off one, 85% of that time of your awake time is 112 hours. I'm sorry, 112 hours of awake time if you're averaging 8 hours of sleep a night, which a lot of y'all sleep like 5 or 6 hours a night, right? And then on Saturday, y'all sleep 14. Isn't that how it works? So somehow it's going to average out to that. But here's what I want you to see. 85% of that 112 is 95 hours. So if you have 95 hours a week, now this is just 85%. This is still taking out a whole day. 95 hours of awake time in 6 days that you are called to cultivate. Watch this. Just watch the different things that you're responsible for. Obviously, all of you are in school. I mean, that's going to be the biggest commitment of your life. So 8 hours times five, 40 hours. Homework, I don't know any high schoolers who actually do 3 hours of homework a night, but I'm giving it to you. 3 hours of homework for 5 days. Not that you're going to do anything on Friday, but you're going to make it up on Sunday. And then even if you're playing a sport or you're in band or you got some type of hobby or commitment that you're committed to, you give that another 15 hours a week. Even after all those things, there's still 25 hours a week that you're actually supposed to be spending cultivating, making things better, developing. And so this big excuse of, hey, you don't realize how busy I am. You don't realize how tired I am after all these things. We kind of just dethroned that whole myth right there. 25 hours a week. I mean, that's really, let's say you go to school, go to practice, and still do 3 hours of homework, that still means you probably have about 2 hours a day. Even 2 hours a day during the week, and then a good 15 hours on Saturday, 16 hours on Saturday. Think about all that time. What do you do with it now? We already took out sports, homework, and school. What else do you do? You can fill in the blank with some of the things. But what I want to show you is this. There is a call for you, and you cannot escape this excuse that you have more time than you know what to do with. And so you can see the second point, the temptation is to abandon. Like we talked through, you heard Luke even share some of these things about the idea of escape. Obviously, escape is energy corrupted. And so there's a variety of ways that we can escape. But I want you to hear this, because whenever I hear the word abandon, I kind of get this image of just this deadbeat dad who doesn't care about his kids and kind of just leaves his kids and just goes and finds life on his own, right? It's a little bit rough, like if you think of the word abandon. But it is such the temptation of ours that because of our passivity, that it is easy to make our life about us and to just kind of shirk the responsibilities that we're called to and go, you know what, I don't really care, I'm going to make this about me. I don't really care about that. I'm just not feeling it right now. I don't really care. I don't want to do something like that. I'm going to do what I want to do. And so whenever we were doing the study, we talked about indolence, which is laziness, kind of escaping into things that at the end of the day just don't really matter that much. A lot of times we'll use the example of video games or something like that. At the end of the day, you could put a lot of time into something that just has no purpose. It does not matter. And I think it's natural for high school guys to fall into that trap. The other side of it, exigence, you'll see this through just being a workaholic. I don't know a lot of guys who are just workaholics about school. I'll see it sometimes about sports or about a hobby. But I actually believe with high school guys, I think even that falls more into indolence than exigence. I don't see a whole lot of just, hey, I'm missing all my opportunities to put all this energy into these other really worthwhile things. So here's what I want to tell you. You need to be aware of where your time is going. You need to be aware that if you have, even if you're doing all these good things, which school, sports, homework, those are actually all great things that you could be cultivating. That is cultivating energy. That is good energy that you are expending to meet a need or to develop other people or yourself. But you got to be aware of where all this extra time is going. You need to figure out what responsibilities you're abandoning, and you need to really figure out what are the opportunities for me to carry more weight. The great just fault of a lot of our high school guys right now, a lot of our young guys, is you're just not carrying any weight. There's not a lot actually depending on you. Like I think there need to be multiple examples in your life right now that you are responsible for something, and if you don't come through, that something is really going to fail. Something worthwhile is not going to happen because it's riding on you. Hopefully you have some of those things right now, but I think the temptation is, even when we have the opportunity, we'll abandon it. All right, so here's where we're going to spend our time. Number three, the need is commitment. And we're going to talk about a couple of different ways we're responsible for things in this, but I said commitment for this reason. It's really easy, especially in our society, it's really easy to go, all right, I'm going to take on this responsibility and this responsibility and this responsibility and this responsibility, and you'll overcommit yourself, and then you'll just kind of fall apart on all of it. What I want to tell you is this. It may not be a bad thing for you to overcommit yourself. I actually think you probably should overcommit yourself, but then actually ride it out for a few months and see what happens. See what you learn about yourself. So here's the deal. As a high school guy, you can understand, obviously, school. School's going to be a major part. But you have a responsibility for all the things that you're surrounded by on a daily basis. Whether it's your schoolwork, whether it's the people you're surrounded by, it's most definitely your family. There's a piece in which you're responsible for yourself. And so I want to give you a couple of different responsibilities, but I want you to view it not just through I'm responsible through this, for this, but I'm actually committed to this responsibility. All right, so the first one, obviously, responsible for your performance in school. Like you just heard Luke say, like this is your job for this season of your life. I don't think it's just because if you make good grades, then you can get a really hot wife who wants to have sex with you. Like as fun as that is, I don't think that's the whole purpose of it all. And so here's what I do think it is. Y'all have jobs right now? All y'all have jobs? What's minimum wage now? $7.25. How many people are making minimum wage? Do y'all not have jobs? How many of y'all are making more than minimum wage? Man, skilled people. It's awesome. All right, so even if you're making $8 an hour, $9 an hour, you can make a solid, what, $250 a week? $300 a week if you're working full-time. Pretty stellar. More money than you know what to do with. Watch this. This is the Palmetto Fellows Scholarship. Here's what it takes. 3.5 GPA, 1,200 on the SAT, and top 6% of your class. They'll pay you that much money. You going to make that making $8 an hour? $9 an hour? $10 an hour? No. And so this is why this is your job. If you will really put yourself into your schoolwork, will commit yourself to it, will say, hey, at the end of the day, this is why it's a job, because there actually is money attached to it. You don't get to see the benefit of it right now, but you can work hard for it for later. Because they'll give you, the state of South Carolina will give you this much money over the course of 4 years with certain degrees and certain colleges. That's more money than you could ever dream of right now. But here's the catch of it. If you're not willing to work hard right now and strive after scholarships, this is one of the big ones. You can still get the Life Scholarship with a 3.0. You can still get a variety of other scholarships based off character, hard work, a variety of things, whether depending on your school, depending on your community, whatever that is. But if you're not willing to work hard enough to do this, really what you're telling your parents is, hey, you know what? I actually value my laziness more than I value your money. Not that your parents are going to pay for college anyway, but here's the deal. If you did not get this scholarship and you had to finance all that through student loans, standard rate for student loans right now, 6.8%. When you graduated college, hold on, go back one. When you graduated college, instead of getting paid $36,700 over the course of college, you would actually be paying back $50,600. I mean, it would cost you $423 a month for 10 years just to pay back what they're willing to pay you. So then you just saw the next slide. The Clemson right now, which blows my mind. Clemson, for an in-state school with room and board, costs about $22,000 a year. $88,000. Is that a significant chunk of money? I think so. So get this. Even if you get the Palmetto Fellow Scholarship, it's not even going to pay for 50%. You better be working hard right now, not just to get the scholarships, but to save up some money, to work with your parents and figure out, hey, how am I going to tackle this? Not that you have to go to Clemson, even though it's the best university ever. But I was talking with Matt this afternoon because he happens to be a Gamecock fan. He's like, man, at least Carolina's not this expensive. Carolina is $20,500 a year. So there's two of the biggest state-supported schools in our state. Pick your choice. It's going to be over 80 grand. You better be working hard, because if you had to finance the whole amount, you would pay $121,000 over 10 years. Here's the trap everybody's getting stuck in right now coming out of school. You can't pay that off in 10 years unless you have a heck of a job. So what everybody does is stretches it out over 20 years. So instead of paying $1,000 a month for 10 years, you might pay $700 a month for 20. You probably pay closer to $200,000 for it. And the crazy thing is, you can have a child and put them in college before you even pay off your own student loans. It's happening all over the place. So whenever we say you need to treat school like your job, this is what we mean. I mean, if you're not willing to work hard now, you're basically saying, I'm going to be in debt and enslaved to my student loans for 10 to 20 years. You might have some parents going, you know what? I got 80 grand laying around. I'll just pay for that. But if you do, chances are you're going to go there and waste a little bit of it anyway. One of my college roommate, whenever I first started, he had the Life Scholarship, which will pay you about 20 grand. Now I think it's actually up to about 27. He had the Life Scholarship, and he went first year, and after first semester, he had a 1.7 GPA. Guess what happened to all that money? It's gone. That quit. So whenever we're saying get serious about your school, treat it as your job, that's why we're saying this. You're responsible for that. All right, look at the next one. Responsible, number two, responsible for your own development. Bill said something similar to this a few minutes ago, but if your parents care, or someone else, care more about your own development than you do, then you are already failing. You actually need to feel the responsibility for growing yourself. You need to know your own strengths. You need to know your own weaknesses. You need to know the way that God has wired you up. And the way you figure those things out is actually by doing something, by committing yourself to a variety of responsibilities, do them, and learn about them over time. It's awesome. You can keep a list of things you've done, and you can cross them off. My dad is an engineer. He actually started working at a power plant and then got a degree in nuclear engineering. And so then whenever I went to Clemson, he goes, hey, you need to do engineering. They have a great engineering school. You need to do that. I knew enough about myself at that point to go, hey, I am not an engineer. I don't think like that. I don't have the capability to do that. I will die in that setting. But at least I knew that through trying some different things, through working with him as an electrician, through working with him doing some other things, through working at the YMCA, through carrying weight in these different ways, I could learn I needed to be around people, and I wasn't really that smart. And so when it came down to it, I couldn't do an engineering degree. The people who were in engineering my first year at Clemson, they were failing. They had to do chemistry and calculus and all these different things. I went to like remedial math for business people. It was awesome. I made straight A's. It was great. All right, here's the deal. Part of understanding yourself and being responsible for your own development is you need to learn your breaking point. We have such a non-committal society that it kind of filters into everything we do. And I think the more responsibility you carry, the more you learn about yourself. But even if you go through seasons where you're overcommitted, it's going to teach you a lot about yourself. It's going to teach you what you're actually capable of. It'll push you further than you actually even intended to go. And I don't think that's really a bad thing. I don't see a lot of guys melting down and having these major life crises in high school because they're overcommitted and they're pushing themselves too hard. What I really see is guys who have too much time on their hands and they're just kind of wasting away their life going, what am I supposed to be doing? And so that's why I say you need to figure out what your breaking point is. Even if you go through a hard season, it will teach you a ton about yourself. You need to learn those things. The sooner you discover your strengths, the sooner you'll actually be able to know how to spend your time cultivating. The sooner you'll be able to make a real difference in the world because it's the unique way that God's wired you up, and you'll actually find much more fulfillment and satisfaction doing all those things, but you have to know things about yourself first. All right, next one. Number three, you got to be responsible for your own fitness. One of the things we talked about in the study was the idea of recreation, energy diverted, to remove energy from certain areas and actually to expend yourself fully in other areas so that those areas could heal. But here's what I want to tell you about your own fitness. You need to learn to push your body. You need to develop a habit of fitness even at a young age. I know a lot of y'all play sports or do different things. It's great. You need to know how far to push yourself. A wise man that I know once said this. He said, don't let the only hard muscle in your body be the one between your legs. So there you go. You should write that down. Some of y'all are just not getting that. But here's what I want to tell you, and this is the truth behind it. I'm not telling you you all got to be jacked just like Joseph Dion. Joseph works out like six times a day, right? That's why he's got his jacket pulled all the way up because he doesn't want to show off. He's got some good genes. You don't have to be jacked, but here's what I would tell you. Your personal fitness has everything to do with your personal confidence. And there's ways to have confidence in other ways, but you are going to be severely handicapped and not able to be bold in some major areas of your life where you're really called to be bold if you're feeling insecure and timid because you don't know what your body can handle. That's why it's that important. You need to really develop a habit of fitness and know what your body can take. All right, the next one. This is a little bit of a soapbox for me. You're responsible for your own rest. One of the things we talked about in the study was rest is energy recovered. And one of my big pet peeves, at least over the last year, is this. It drives me insane how high school guys and girls will brag about how little sleep they get. Like, I don't think you're getting so much little sleep because of how just busy and how you're spending yourself in all these other areas. What it really shows is your life is just really out of whack. And so I see it all the time, and I try to crush it whenever I see it. And there's just this sense in which we get a lot of self-value out of how busy we are and out of how little sleep we get. But the truth is, if you're not really having a good balance in your life, if you're not getting enough rest for what you need, then all it's going to do is make your life out of whack and make you weak in a lot of areas. You need to know how much sleep you need. You need to know how much rest you need. You need to know when you need to get away from people or when you need to actually press into people. But rest is actually a core part of who we are. You got to figure that out as a high school student. For me personally, I actually require a lot of sleep. I wish I didn't. But I was in Kenya with Bill a few months ago, and he would get a little bit aggravated at me that I would go to sleep about an hour before him, and I would sleep about an hour after he woke up in the morning too. And so he's cursed and can't sleep. I evidently need a lot of sleep. And so I'm a little bit more of a girl, but I know what I need. And so I have to get it. But here's the deal. The more you brag about that, if that resonates with you, all it's really showing is how weak you are and how you can't really actually create any balance in your life. That's a responsibility you have. You really got to own. All right, number five. You're responsible for the people you're surrounded by. We've talked about schoolwork, but based on what we were saying earlier, if you spend about 40 hours a week in school, you're going to be surrounded by people at school. So your classmates, think about your classmates. Think about the teams, sports teams you're on. You're surrounded by those people. Think about your teachers. You have a responsibility for them. In each of these ways, if the idea of cultivating is to meet a need or develop, then you have a responsibility for the people you're surrounded by. Whether they're your friends or not, just peers, you have a responsibility to get to know them and to help them thrive and flourish. And the only way to do that is actually live out your faith in a way that introduces them to Jesus. It's impossible to thrive and flourish if you're not pointing them towards Him. And so you need to feel the responsibility there. The people you're surrounded by on a daily basis should be people that you are cultivating and developing. At the same time, think about your family. Think about the amount of time you spend with your family. Your dad, who's here with you tonight, actually bears the weight of the curse in a way that you don't have to. He is providing tremendous amounts of shade for you to where you have a responsibility for that. You need to understand what he does. You need to understand the weight that he carries for you. Not that you can feel it perfectly, but you should at least be asking questions. You should be figuring out, hey, what are the things you do? Why did you think through it that way? Why did you make this decision? You have this opportunity to learn from your dad in a way that you have with no one else. You get to see him lead your mom and your family in such a unique way. You need to press into him. Same way with your mom. Your mom is lending strength to your dad in a really unique and powerful way. You should be honoring her. you should actually be blessing her. The fact that you are her child, you should be making life better for her. I think that plays out in a variety of different ways. But you need to hear that clearly. Your mom or your dad shouldn't always have to ask you to do something. You should see a need and you should meet it. That's what it means to cultivate. That you could actually be a blessing to them, give life to them in this unique way because of the season of life you're in. You're still under their roof, but you have all this maturity, hopefully, and you have all this freedom because a lot of y'all are driving, a lot of y'all are doing different things, some of you have jobs. But it requires some intentionality, and it requires some energy. Too often, we're just kind of shirking the responsibility of our family, and we're spending way more time with friends and other people than we are with our family ourselves. And so you need to feel that, especially with your siblings. If you have siblings, younger siblings or older, that they are going to look up to you, and if you're going to develop other people and help them thrive, it starts with your siblings. I know that's the last place you want it to start. You have a responsibility there. All right, last one. You're responsible for your own spiritual health. You need to be developing your mind with an understanding of God's word. The more that you understand, the more you will live out. The more that you live a life of dependence upon Him at this point, the more you will continue to do so in the future. The more that you actually trust Him, understand Him, and make the connections within your mind to where, oh, this is what this passage means, this is how I'm supposed to live this out, the more strength you will find because you'll be basing your life more in Christ. That's what Galatians 2:20 is saying. I've been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And so as you take that responsibility, and I don't mean it just in the sense of going, all right, I got to get up every morning at 6 a.m. and read my Bible. I think you got to figure out what works for you. Like I've told a lot of y'all this before. For me, like it's much better for me to do it at night, but I still figure out ways for me to actually study at night and then leave my Bible open on my nightstand for in the morning where I can get up, read that passage again, and actually remember what I was thinking about and actually start my day that way. That's huge for me. But you got to figure out what works for you. One of the other ways is this, especially for guys. You need to be in community, but I know a lot of y'all are tied to Forge on different campuses, whether you're Powdersville or downtown or Pelham. We might have some Golden Strip people here, but there's a difference in being in community and being in a community group. Too often we got guys who are going, oh yeah, I'm a part of Forge, I'm in a group, that's great, but are you actually known? You need to make sure you are making yourself known. All right, so then the last two. Number four says the requirement is courage. We always say lead courageously. This idea of courage is huge for me. I spent most of my high school years wrestling through courage and feeling like a coward a lot of the time. And I think we need a group of men, really a group of young men, who are willing to be bold in their faith and are willing to live out their faith in the context of their life. And so for y'all, obviously, that's school, that's home, it's the people you're surrounded by. It's the things we keep coming back to. But if you're willing to do it, it's going to be countercultural. You're going to stand out. It's going to require a boldness and a courage. And the thing that I love that Luke said at the beginning was this, that there's part of it that he just hates school so much, but he's got to put his head down and just kind of press through because that's the calling on his life right now. That's how character's being formed. And there's this, if you ever go in my office, you'll see this kind of picture with a poem on it. I'm not really a poetic type of guy, if you know me at all. But our first Christmas with my wife when we were dating, she got me this picture of where I'd taken her on our first day out to Rainbow Falls. And then she had put in this poem about courage on it. And the thing that stood out to me so much was, it's got a phrase in there that says, God, help me be courageous in the difficult ordinariness of now. Like, I love that phrase, the difficult ordinariness of now. That you don't feel like you're really making this huge contribution right now. You're going through school. I know it can be pointless at times. I'm a big purpose guy myself. I struggled through it all as well. But the ordinary times right now can be really difficult, but they are the biggest opportunity that you have to be courageous and live out your faith. Then the last one, the reward is fulfillment in Christ. Psalm 27, verse 4 says this. Just write down Psalm 27, 4. It says, "The one thing I ask, the thing I seek most, is to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life." I think the biggest reward that you could possibly receive right now, like in Men's Roundtable, we always talk about expecting God's reward. But one of the biggest rewards you could receive right now is actually open to you right now, and it's this idea of fulfillment. That if there was a word that marked teenage guys, it would probably be the word insecure. That there's so much kind of pressure on you, there's so much attention on you. But the more that you live these things out, the more that you understand, not just pressing into Christ, but living out your faith and actually owning your work, being responsible for things, carrying real weight, that's actually the arena where we live out our faith, is our responsibilities. And as you understand that, you'll get more and more fulfilled and satisfied in Him. Like, I love this passage in Psalm 27 because you can feel David's angst, and you can also feel his contentment. And in this sense, there's nothing on this earth that will fulfill him in the same way as being in the house of the Lord all the days of his life. That is there that he is content. He is fulfilled. He is actually not lacking anything. Completely secure. And that's the reward. But it comes as you actually commit yourself to the work at hand, work hard, develop yourself, and develop others. That's where it plays itself out. And that's why it's so important that you treat your schoolwork that seriously. That you apply this idea of cultivating to people. That you will develop other people. That you'll develop yourself. That you'll have a responsibility for your own fitness, for your own rest, for your own family, for the people you're surrounded by, for all these different things. Because as you do that on a daily basis, you will walk in an active relationship of trust with Him. And that's the neat part. So here's the end. I've just put a place on there that said big takeaways. Here's four things I want to kind of leave you with. And it's just a recap of really what I just said. But number one says this: commit yourself to some responsibilities. I feel like we talked through that pretty well, so I don't have a lot to say about that. But you need to figure out where you can do this. I think you can do this at church. I think you can do this at school. I think you can do this on a sports team. I think you can do this at home. I think there's other areas. But you got to commit yourself to multiple responsibilities. And then the second one is figure out your breaking point. The only way to know your breaking point, I said this earlier, is to work so hard with such intensity at a variety of things for a period of time. This doesn't happen in a week. This doesn't happen in a few weeks. I think it could happen in a few months, but you've got to commit yourself to multiple things that you are willing to hit with an intensity. That's where you'll figure out your breaking point. And then the third one says this: you can't become a godly man and live within your comfort zone. There's no part of living in your comfort zone and building up comforts for yourself that's going to stretch you at all. Guess where you actually learn to trust Christ? In the areas that you actually have something to trust Him for. So put yourself out there. Be willing to be courageous. Be willing to be stretched and live for His glory and not your own. And then the fourth one is this: your dad is probably your biggest advocate. I only say probably because I know there are stories where your dad's gone. I know that there's deep wounds where your dad can have a wound on you, and it can still be something that really forms you and you press through. But I can guarantee you this: if your dad's here, he is your biggest advocate. He wants nothing more than to see you succeed. He wants nothing more than to see you not just succeed, but develop into a godly young man. And so you need to put some energy into that. You need to figure out what that's all about. You need to have a tight relationship with Him. Now, you're going to need some other men as well. You're going to need a multitude of guys, even each other, kind of on the same level, above, below. You're going to need all kind of guys speaking into your life to get some clarity and really applying truth to you. But you got to have that relationship with your dad. It's important. If you don't, fill it with another role model. I say that seriously. There are a multitude of men in our church who would love to be that figure for you. So here's what we're going to do. I know that's a lot of info. Hopefully you got all the blanks. We're going to do a little bit of Q&A. And so let me pray for us and just ask that God would kind of let that settle on us. And then I would love to know what questions y'all have. Let me pray. God, thanks for your word. Thanks for the unique design that you've given us as men and how we are really called to take on these responsibilities and to live them out courageously. And so, God, I want to ask that you would give us clarity, that if there are questions, we could answer them here. But the biggest thing is that you would really help us leave with a couple of action steps to where we would really be resting assured that our hope is in you, and that we are being influential as we live lives of cultivation. Show us the needs that we can meet. Help us develop ourselves and each other. And God, help us really create the culture that you want us to create within this world. In your name, amen.
All right. My name's Matt Williams. I know most of you, probably a few I don't. My role is to help facilitate Q&A. So I'm going to have Bill come on up, who has four times as many boys as I do, and I taught this weekend. So generally we put a muzzle on whoever taught over the weekend. They're not really that healthy on Monday till about Tuesday evening or Wednesday morning. So I'll try to be careful if something comes my way. But let me open the floor. I'm sure that there are probably some dads that you kind of jotted something down or something happened over the last 6 or 8 weeks, and you were thinking, hey, that doesn't make sense to me. Or when you get a variety of teachers, Jim Taylor helped carve out a lot of this material. He and Bill worked together on this. Mike Chibero taught, I taught. And so there'll be points where it sounds like, it sounds like Bill said this, but Chibero said this, or Matt said this, and Jim Taylor said that. So I think any points where you feel like there was a contradiction, or something doesn't quite make sense, or how do you bring balance to something, or something real practical, some practical application, because we all have boys, but we are all Mike Chibero's personality, very different than Bill's, very different than mine, and so there are different ways to apply some of the same principles. So we wanted to open it for dads and sons to be able to ask any questions that you have. So let me open the floor, and I'll repeat the question. I got a daughter who's 18, who's in that same spot. She has worked really hard her first 3 years and then just finished her senior project. And so she's going, I got 2 months. I got 2 months. So Bill's actually lived through this at least once. And so
I think you should enjoy the break you're having. It's a little bit of a sabbatical because you're getting ready to be ignorant and not know anything and work harder than you ever have. And so I would enjoy it. I do think you have to be careful. One of the things that we found as my second son, who's graduating, who's a senior, the sport that he plays is real involved and is a spring sport. So while all his school stuff is settled and college is settled and all whatever scholarships he has, all that stuff is settled. So in that sense, he's with you. He's still working really hard with a group of guys that he's been with for a long time. The challenge that I found, that we found, and we found this with our men, is that pursuing, protecting, and providing energy, distinctively masculine energy, those things are all tied. And if you're not working hard to provide and protect, you're going to struggle with the corruption of pursuing energy most of the time. So sexual temptation is going to be greater for you when you're not carrying weight. And that's why a lot of times, some of you older guys, your dad say, you need to go work out, and that'll help you deal with sexual temptation. The idea is not just that you need to burn off some physical energy. The idea is that you need, the way we're designed, all of that flows, even hormonally, it's coming from very similar places. And so I think you just have to guard yourself. And you need to be carrying weight. Now, you need to rest, too. And sometimes we have rest that's seasonal. And that's what I would say. You're in a little bit of a sabbatical. And you get to enjoy and give thanks to God for the freedom that you have. But you have to be aware of that, and that's where community, I think, could be important for you and all that. Is that good?
I agree. It's the benefit of working hard early. Paid the price early and all that. Yep. Yep. The idea is that we need to make sure our high school group leaders are aware and have heard some of this and are thinking along these lines too. And so as we're creating it, yeah, then we start finding ways to push it down. Yep. Thank you. I mean, I think in our home, when my 16-year-old comes in, really last year when he started high school at 15 and he was playing sports, he goes to a small school, so he gets to play all the sports, and he's studying and working, and he's dragging down the stairs to go to sleep, and my wife looks at me and goes, "I'm worried about him. I'm worried. I think he's doing too much." I was like, "Well, we'll find out soon enough." So she's like, "I mean, he's exhausted." I was like, "Right," and that's keeping him from doing a lot of other very destructive things. And so I think it's a healthy thing until he finds out where the line is for him. It's a healthy thing for him to be physically and mentally and emotionally exhausted. And it's our job as parents to be a part of that and to be watching and to be looking for, where is he starting to break down? Where is he emotionally coming loose? Where is he reaching the max? I think that's part of our job to help inform that and watch that. But mom naturally is worried about the pressure that he's under and the exertion. And so, and I'm able to go, "Well, I mean, no, I don't, we'll find out. We'll find out soon enough. It's going to take a little bit, you know." And I just don't think we can be afraid to begin to enter into the process of taking on lots of weight and responsibility and going to bed exhausted. I don't think we need any time allocated for playing video games. I just don't think that's not a valuable contribution to what we're doing. You go, "Well, you're saying video games are bad." I'm not saying video games are bad. It's fine to play. But I'm just saying the fact that we go a week or 2 weeks or a month and we don't have time for any of that kind of recreation, as a team, I think that's fine. Because there's recreation built into the day. I mean, between classes, we talk and we laugh at lunch. I mean, there's plenty of community and recreation time built in. So that's part of my thinking about that. Being pushed early is, I don't think we're worried on the front end about pushing too hard on character issues. So then let me do this. You want to jump in real quick? Well, let me just say this. Here's one of the things I am concerned about with our dads. I feel like a lot of our dads, we're pushing on the wrong issue. We're putting pressure on our sons to perform in ways that aren't that valuable, but that are valuable in the culture. But then we're not putting pressure on them to perform in ways that are valuable in secret, but not that valuable in the culture. So we're paying lots of money, putting lots of energy into kids playing travel soccer, travel baseball, travel basketball, whatever. And your son is never going to be a great athlete. There's just very few of them. And playing travel, whatever, does not get you a college scholarship. You're either wired up for that or you are not. And if you were on the fence and you want to work really hard so that you can play at PC, I mean, that's fine. Right? I mean, that is fine. But the real athletes, they don't have to play travel anything. They just show up and they dominate. But we're putting pressure on these boys to perform like this. And then on like the character issue that we brought up with Luke, of what does it mean to pour yourself into school where you get no reward, where you may not even be that good at it. But that kind of diligence is a character issue. And I'm worried that we have dads putting pressure for their sons to perform, and daughters, all right, in these ways that gather attention or make them famous, and missing out on the opportunity to put pressure around real issues of character that don't bring any fame or any glory right now. But they create a work ethic and learning how you go, "Well, I'm not that great at school." So I hear dad say, "I mean, well, he's not very good at school, so I try not to make a big deal out of it." Well, no, the fact that you're not that good at school doesn't mean that you work less. It actually means that you work more. It actually means that you got a bigger hill to climb and it's going to be harder, and you're going to have to work harder at school, and you're going to have to deal on even a more difficult level for you. But if you're going to be able to make a living, you're going to be able to compete, you're going to have to work harder at that. That'd be a character issue of overcoming a mountain that's really high, really difficult, rather than trying to be good at a sport that you may or may not be very good at. Or even if you are good, what difference does it make? You're going to play this for 3 years of high school, and then it's going to be over. There's only so much benefit to being a part of that. Very few are going to go and do something else. And I do worry that dads are backing off of where they need to put pressure on character issues, working hard at school. This boy has a mouth, and he talks back to his mother, and he's like, "Well, he's becoming a teenager now." That's irrelevant. That is irrelevant. That's actually where he needs to be real clear and real disciplined with his mouth. So we don't care how well he plays on Friday night. We care how well he talks in the kitchen to his mother. That's really important because that is going to mean something in the future. And I'm worried that we have dads who are worried about, it's great if your son can compete this way, but the other things of being able to work hard, develop character in private, bear a burden, be respectful, be honest, tell the truth, never cut corners off of anything, and be held accountable to an intense degree over character issues. And then get lots of grace around performance issues that really don't matter. Now, on Friday night, really want you to play hard. Right? Really want you to play hard. But whether you shot 10% or 30%, who knows? None of us know why that ball goes in some nights and why it doesn't go in other nights. No one has an answer to that. Ask North Carolina, who just shot 28% the other night. sorry, that's my thing about pressure.
No, I think that's good. I do. This is the thing that is so simple to me that if I could say it to all of you young men in the presence of all your dads, this is such a simple thing, and I don't know why we miss this, is that your presence in every environment should make it better, always. So if you walk through a room and you spend more than 20 seconds walking through the room, that room ought to get better because you passed through it. That's just simple. That's the simplest that I know to make cultivation. And that means that because you have, like for us, it's a challenge. We have, my 20-year-old was home for spring break, all right? So we got five men and one woman living in 2,400 square feet. We do four loads of laundry a day. My wife works a full-time job. I work a full-time job. My kids carry a lot of responsibility at school and are involved in a whole bunch of different things. There's a lot that's got to get done and a lot that's got to get produced on a daily basis. And one of the big things that we've been dealing with and everybody's having to learn on, and I have to own that I did not establish this as standard, and my wife actually fought me on it because part of her identity as they got older, a way that she got an identity out of serving them and doing things for them that they really needed to do for themselves. And so my wife just spent 6 weeks with her back. She actually strained a ligament in her back. She's already had a back surgery from doing laundry because she don't want to let go of the laundry because she wants to do that for everybody. And she doesn't want the chaos that would come from putting them in charge of it and having to train them in it, right? Because they would not do a good job. But here's the principle that we've been distilling things down to, and I want all you boys to hear this, you young men, and I want all your dads to hear this, is that a man's presence in any environment ought to make that environment better. And so that applies in a classroom. If you have a teacher who's an idiot, and there are plenty of teachers who are idiots, okay? So my teacher's an idiot. What's new? We got lots of people who are unwise and foolish who are in positions of authority in the world. That's not going to change when you get out of school. So the question is, how do you make an environment better when you have someone who is foolish over you? That's work. And so if you're in the house and you eat dinner, the kitchen ought to be better because you ate dinner there. And if anybody has to tell you to make an environment better, then you have already failed as a man. If your dad has to waste one drop of energy telling you that you shouldn't throw all your dirty socks and underwear all over the floor, then you are robbing someone else, your mom, his job, somebody else of energy they ought to be getting to pour into you to tell you to do something that you already know how to do. Does that make sense? I mean, it's just simple to me. And I think all you 15-year-olds understand that. And I think all you dads, we don't all live up to that, but that's the standard. That's part of the dialogue that we're trying to have right now when we think about work, is that any environment I enter into ought to be better when I leave than when I first went in. And I think if you begin to think that way with some of the categories that Daniel gave you tonight, it'll give you crystal clarity about what you need to be carrying and what you need to be doing. And someone should not have to tell you to do that. Someone may have to help you understand how to better do that, but they shouldn't have to tell you to do that, because we can all be clear on that. It's not a complicated principle. And I was late to, I didn't have that kind of language, and so I didn't give that kind of language. And so there were a handful of things that I let my wife carry longer than she should have carried because she was wanting to help and with good intentions. And it's one of the areas as a leader that I'm having to back up now. And there has been some serious butt cutting in my house over the last 2 months, has there not? Well, we're trying to get our brains wrapped around what this looks like. And I'm not doing it perfectly, but it's something that we're trying to figure out and not live in chaos. Because if we all share the load, it isn't that difficult to do. And so that's a simple thing. And it's one of the things that really I've always struggled with from years going back into student ministry is why does a teenage boy make his house worse? Well, it's because he's a boy and not a man. But if you want the freedoms of being a man, then it ought to be better because you're there. Nobody should have to tell you to cut the grass. You got eyes. You see. If your dad has to say, hey, bro, I need you to go cut the grass. You see if the grass is too tall. Right? And you go sit down and you play video games for an hour and a half rather than handling something that you already saw as a weak sauce because you knew that needed to be done. You just didn't want to do it. Right? And so that's part of the deal that we learn to embrace. And it's going to be the same way when you're a man in other categories. Your employer is going to be the deal for you when you have an employer. There are certain employees who walk in and just make everything better. And they make more money and they get promoted quickly. And then there are other employees who pretend they didn't see things so that they don't have to get engaged in something that's not on their job description. And those people don't get promoted and they make less money. That's just the facts. And so you might as well start being trained and learning and all that now. And I know nobody asked that question, but I just wanted to say it while you're all here. That's my one deal.
Yeah, that's my one deal. And what Bill is, the foundation that Bill speaks on is that God gave you a sense of nobility. Non-Christian man, Christian man. Men have a sense of nobility that Bill is appealing to. And what I would say is that the recognition of the nobility that you have as a man creates all kinds of opportunity. When you begin to recognize it and act on it, it creates worlds of adventure for you to be a part of. But you got to move in that direction and begin to explore it. Let me pause there. I got one more thing. Any questions? Did that stir up anything else or make you think of anything? I would say a job. Take what he said, making your home better. Because, like, for us, that's a real challenge. I mean, we're diving across the finish line of school, and then there's things that we try to do in the summer to clean up our home, reorganize it, make it better, clean out. I think it's a contribution you get to make to your home, and then I think it's a great opportunity to work also outside your home, produce some income, see how little you make, see what that feels like. I mean, I think it's an opportunity not just to train for sports, but to also work in some ways.
And when you work, ask the person you're working for what you could have done better. Learning how to work well is a skill. There's a right way to spread pine straw. There's a professional way to sweep a floor where it's done properly. And you don't know it until you're trained in it. And a lot of people will want to be nice to you, and they'll say, oh, you did a good job. And you say, nah, I probably didn't do a good job because I hadn't done this before. Would you please tell me the three things I could have done to do a better job? And then they'll tell you, say, well, you really should have done this, should have done that, should have done this. And you got here 15 minutes late, and yada, yada, yada. And they'll tell you. But you got to ask for it. But if you want to get better, you got to ask questions when you're working over the summers. And that will translate later in your life, I promise you. Okay, I'm going to comment on it.
That's not a good.
Yeah, here's what I would say is, he needs people below, beside, and above. Almost in equal proportions. And this is what I would say. The idea that I need to be listening to my peers more, I think it needs to be in equal proportions. And not just his dad, but there need to be men. All of you young men need to be seeking that from older men. Find an older man that you can connect with. And it's the push and pull of information, is you need to be pulling good information from other men above you. You need to be learning how to have real honest relationships with men alongside you, talking about real things, confessing sin, sexual sin, where I'm being lazy, that kind of honest dialogue. And then you need to have people below you that you are pouring yourself out to, that they're struggling with things, And so serving in ministries at our church, that dynamic, that kind of full-orbed community where you are pushing and pulling information from above, where you are sharing with peers this way on the basis of what you're hearing here, and then where you are pressing down, all three of those things ought to be present in everybody's life regardless of their developmental stage all the time. And so I don't think it's any different developmentally for a young man. It's exactly the same. But I do think there needs to be, I don't think there should be a problem with, I don't think there should be only so much that he should receive from his dad. I think that's something our culture has put on us. I think a son, if a son is a fool, then he's not going to ask his dad good questions. That's what how the Bible would define it. He's an arrogant fool. But if he's not an arrogant fool, and we've just made that normative for our culture, you okay with how I'm saying that?
You're doing a good job.
We've made that normative for our culture where we think that teenage young men ought to not care what their parents think. The Bible says that's an arrogant fool. And we need to reclaim that and say, but here's why I'd say part of why our young men are arrogant fools is because they don't have any responsibility because they know their parents are going to stroke a check for $88,000 worth of college. And they get another 4 years of adolescence. I'm not banging on you if you're going to pay for all your kids' college. That's great. But here's what I would say is you better be disciplined. They need to be carrying weight, and they need to be finding out how powerful they are. And the only way a young man can find out how powerful he is by suffering through the struggles of carrying that weight, and that will make him open to ask questions. And I learned that with my oldest when I started doing the math for him like Daniel did up here, and he was squandering some opportunity. I was like, bro, I'm not bailing that out. I said, I don't know what you're thinking, but here's what that's going to look like for you. And suddenly he started asking me questions. He'd be like, well, I mean, you think I ought to get another job? I said, probably, because the job you got is paying you $7.25, and if you work 100 hours a week between now and fall semester, here's how much money you're going to have, and here's the check Clemson's going to be asking for on August the 15th. That is not going to go well for you. So you need to have a better plan. Suddenly he started asking questions from me, and I think weight produces humility, and humility produces an openness to real community on every level. Humility will make you serve. Humility will make you open to other guys around you. And humility will make you ask good questions of people who are smarter than you. And so I think that's where Daniel's deal about getting loaded up with weight and knowing that this is mine and I'm going to carry it and I need some help produces an opportunity for community. Respect is earned. And so but I have to give a certain measure of respect and human dignity. So I'll give you an example. I hired my college son while he was on spring break. He needs money. So I hired him to work for me. And I overpaid him because I didn't know how bad he was going to be at the things I asked him to do. All right? And he hadn't painted. I had him paint a room for me. If he was here, I mean, we've joked about it. And he was just doing a terrible job painting. And so I came home and saw the terrible job that he was doing, and I was actually disrespectful to him. And he stopped me, and he said, hey, he said, because he knows the routine, right? He's 20 now. He said, hey, I hadn't done this before. And I was like, I hear you. And so I started showing him how to do it. But then part of what I also said to him is, but you hadn't called me one time today to ask me a good question. I said, you hadn't called me and said, hey, I'm feeling a little lost as I'm painting this room. How should I go about that? You got any suggestions for me? And we talked about the push and pull of information. And I was kind of disrespectful to him. I insulted his human dignity a little bit. I said a couple of things I shouldn't have said. But at the same time, it's on him to do a quality of work that commands my respect. And then once he's done that, and I say, hey, bro, you did a good job. That looks awesome. Then he knows he earned that respect, and he can feel good about that. And I don't think we understand the concept of earning respect very much in our culture anymore. And I don't think it hurts our girls as much as it hurts our boys. But it's devastating for our boys. When you give boys a trophy for being terrible at something, you're eroding their soul in a way, because respect is the currency of manhood. I firmly believe that. And so when you undermine that, it's a dangerous thing. So I would say you have to respect their individuality, and you can't insult them, and you have to train. But they also have to aspire to excellence in their work to earn your respect. And the pressure has to be put on them to say, well, you have to earn my respect. Now the pressure is on you as a dad to have clear expectations that they can meet, you know? And so you got to be asking, like, I'm not asking, academics are not Luke's thing. He's gifted in some other ways. But I'm not going to disrespect Luke. I'm not making Luke get a 1400 on the SAT to earn my respect. But I did have a son who was gifted academically, and he lost a bunch of respect from me because he didn't get a 1400. Because he rolled out of bed and got a 1340. He just showed up.
So common.
No, I'm just...
It's the same old story.
No, and for like, and here's the thing. And he can work, and I can say this. He can work as hard as he wants to. You going to score 1400 on the SAT? No. So we're getting ready to invest $1,000 to try and help him get the opportunity to get 4 years' worth of scholarships to make him more competitive. But he's going to have to work really hard to do that. So I got to have standards, you know. So the standards got to be oriented around effort and the character and how hard he works. But he's also got to put in the effort to gain my respect. So my son, who got the great score, he actually lost a ton of respect because I gave him a plan. I suggested an outline for how he could do it, and he didn't follow any of that. Now, he's since repented of all of that, and he's dealing with some consequences in that monetarily for himself personally. And we're good on all of that. Does that make sense? Is that helpful?
And I think one of the components of the respect piece, I do think we have a generation of young men who just, humility is a part of it, and they have not been humbled by, and I think work's one way to humble them. And so it's hard for them to respect when you are Mufasa in your house. I think it's complicated. And I'm very concerned about my generation and above me of nice dads. Maybe they had an overbearing dad, and now their response to their overbearing dad is, I'm going to be loving dad. And Steve Sample, you know, refers to a lot of this. He's the president of Southern Cal, and he refers to the super text, and he lists out about 15, what he calls super text. And the Prince by
What book is that? Just so they know. Is that Contrarian?
The Contrarian's Guide to Leadership. It's a really good book for business, being dad, your home, any of that. Steve Sample, he's the one who created basically the processor that all your dishwashers and microwaves run off of. He laid in the floor in the lotus position, and it came to him. It's like this miraculous kind of configuration that he created. But he's one of the few, you know, engineers, scientists who can actually lead something at that scale. And so he's done this massive thing at Southern Cal. He's brilliant. But he writes a great practical book, Contrarian's Guide to Leadership. He refers to the supertext, The Prince by Machiavelli's One. And he'll say this in his leadership principles. If you have to choose between respect and love, or not respect, he says fear. If you have to choose between fear and love with people who are underneath you, choose fear. Because you can make up the other later. It's basically what he says. Here's what I encourage you to do. I would encourage you to not put those things on poles. And go, it's either fear or love. I would say that every ounce of leadership in your home involves both. All the time. They oscillate back and forth. They work together. They're very important. I mean, Jesus is throwing people out of the temple because he's angry. He's got a whip. I mean, you think he didn't hit anybody that day when he kicked all that stuff over? I mean, he's throwing stuff. I would just say those two, I would encourage you to not put those things on poles, to put them together. And I think there's something to really think about. I'll tell you another book by Robert Bly, B-L-Y, called Iron John, a book about men. It's taken from the myth, the Grimm brothers deal. Like, it's in that book, Tale 136, the German fable about Iron John. But this is by Robert Bly, Iron John's take on that, about what does it mean for a young man to become a man and the wound that is critical and who gives that wound. It is poetry, and he's out there a little bit in some ways. It is worth reading and thinking about. But I think there's a humility piece in respect. And I think there's a role that dad plays of going ahead and being respectable. And we're not going to be friends right now. This is not what, our job is not to be friends right now. You are Simba, and I'm Mufasa, and that's the relationship, and that's how this is going to work for a while. And I don't think that's the opposite of love by any stretch. And then there are real tender moments that are real affectionate, you know. I think it's a really great question, and I am really concerned. We have some angry young men in our church and in our community. And one of the common denominators I see among angry young men is they are angry with very nice dads. And Vicky and I thought, like, that's the nicest man in the world. What is that boy all angry about? And some of what, not all, but what some of these guys are angry about is they think they want to be Mufasa in their home, but it's exhausting. And they wind up hating the man who won't take all that heat for them, who won't carve the path and tell them, here, no, actually, that's not what we're doing. Here's what I think we got to do. Here's what's best. And to be able to hear and listen, and you know, for Micah, and he'll tell you. I mean, Micah come in with something. I mean, I'll ask him 10 questions. I'll go, well, tell me about this. Well, tell me about what. He will tell you. I will fully hear him out. I want to fully hear it. And then now someone's got to make a decision, you know, and here's what I think we got to do. So, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think it's critical for what's coming along in a lot of our men, a lot of our homes. Not a lot of respect. That's it. Yeah, we're late. Let me pray and we'll be done. You got anything? You good? All right. Father, thanks for the ability to gather. We're just going to confess. We are not taking the stage because we got it all right. In fact, part of the reason we're on the stage is because we got so much wrong, and you're showing us. And even in these moments, we can't communicate everything in a precise way that is now formulaic to be followed. We cannot nuance everything to make it perfect. Father, we're asking that we could talk about big ideas, we could talk about practical ideas, and that you're going to lead through your spirit, and you're going to give insight. You're going to create light for our path. You're going to create wisdom and the ability to move forward. Father, we ask that you would do that. I thank you for these men. Pray that you would create something here that moves forward in this next generation, and then maybe creates momentum for a lot of generations in the future. We want to be sensitive to you and how you're leading, and we give it all to you in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you guys for coming tonight.